Hey, what's up, guys? Welcome to the Debunk Podcast, where we talk about quite literally anything about everything. Today's show is going to be a little bit different. It's going to be me and Kailash. As everyone knows, the election is going to be in 2 days, and today we're going to be giving our predictions for the presidential race and the Senate.
So, without further ado, let's begin.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty self-explanatory. We're just gonna talk about how we think things are gonna play out on election day. But it's important to note that what we say is not what will actually happen. It's just our predictions.
All right, so like we said, we're going to start off with the Senate. So first of all, let's go off like what the polls are saying, like strictly off the polls, like what will be the result. Now, what the polls saying aren't necessarily our predictions. We'll say that a little later on. But if we're going by the polls, Democrats have 33 seats in which there's going to be no election in 2020, 7 safe Democratic seats, 3 likely Democratic seats, 4 and 4 lean Democratic seats, for a total of 49 seats. The Republicans will have 30 seats facing no election, with 9 of them being safe seats, 2 of them being likely, and 5 of them being lean. This puts the Republicans at 46 seats, 49 to 46. Then are the Democrats and Republicans, with 5 swing seats, those being in the states of Montana, Iowa, Georgia, Georgia Special, and North Carolina. I get right now the Democrats, it looks like they have a pretty good advantage. Like, they only need 2 more seats for a majority, 1 more seat if Joe Biden becomes president. And what do you think about that, Kailash, about the position of the Democrats right now?
I mean, it is important to note that, like, the Democrat agenda, some of it will, like, it's not going to be exactly very, it's not going to get a lot of support from some of the more centrist senators like Joe Manchin. So, they're going to need more than, like, 51 or 52 seats just to, like, have a safe kind of buffer if maybe 1 or 2 senators defect.
Now, when you say, like, not very popular, like, what specific things would you talk about?
Like, say, the filibuster, right? Like, Joe Manchin, he doesn't support that because he thinks it's good to work with the other side. I mean, clearly he's, in my opinion, he's a bit misguided about that because, I mean, just look around the country, nothing.
You also have to remember, too, that, like, if Biden wins, like, obviously if Biden loses, the Democrats need a majority, but if Biden wins, like, Kamala would be the tiebreaker. So, I mean, it's not, like, as stringent as I think you say it is.
Yeah, but, like, in the scenario in which you speak of where they might only need 50 or 51 seats, if Joe Manchin and, like, say, Kyrsten Sinema of Arizona, if they decide, both of them, maybe, that decide that they don't want to vote for some of the Democrats' policies, like ending the filibuster, then that might give them a little bit of trouble.
Yeah, so, anyways, but they are in a better position definitely than they were, you know, when they lost in 2016. Actually, no, they already had the Senate lost in 2016. Anyways, so now going into our prediction a little bit. As far as I'm concerned, Arizona, Montana, Iowa, Georgia, South Carolina, Georgia Special, North Carolina, and Maine are the main districts that are are the main states in which things could, like, really flip. I think the rest of them, although some might be likely Republican, some might be lean Republican, some might be safe Republican, I think, and some might be likely lean safe for the other side too. I think those states will definitely go either Republican or Democrat. These are the only 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 races where I think something could, like, legitimately change. What do you think about that? Do you have any other races you want to keep an eye on?
No, not really. I mean, There was some fear among Democrats that, like, maybe Michigan could go red because it was looking pretty close early on. But I think those fears are mostly unfounded by now because, like, the Democrat has a pretty, like, stable, solid lead.
Yeah, I'd say so too. All right. So I guess let's get into our predictions. You want to start with Arizona?
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah, we'll go from west to east. So. Mm-hmm.
Wait, if we're going west to east, then we need to start with Alaska.
No, but I'm talking about, like, you know, states that we actually care about. I feel Alaska's going to go Republican.
Well, I mean, I kind of want to disagree with that because there are a lot of undecided voters, but, like, it seems like it'll go
Republican. If you want to talk about that, sure, go ahead.
So in Alaska, obviously there's a close Senate race. So we have the incumbent Senator Dan Sullivan. He's a Republican, and people are kind of fed up with him because he acts like an independent. But he always votes with the Republicans, which I'm sure is a problem with another one of the senators we're going to talk about. And his opponent, Al Gross, is he's technically an independent, but he's going to caucus with the Democrats. And he's presenting himself as kind of like the true independent candidate. Polls have shown that, you know, there's sometimes up to double digits percentages of people who are undecided. And in a race like that, it's very hard to predict who's going to actually, you know, have a chance of coming better, who's going to have a better chance of winning, simply because anyone could change their mind very quickly. That being said, I still think the Republicans going to win there, just because Alaska in general is a solidly Trump state. And, you know, in today's, specifically in today's landscape, how Trump performs in a certain state is also going to determine how, like, people down ballot or you know what their chances are of winning.
I know this obviously a state that's not, you know, completely safe Republican, but I mean, I'm gonna be honest, I'm pretty sure Sullivan's gonna win this race. Gross definitely gonna give him like a good run on his money, but I'm pretty sure Sullivan's gonna win this race. All right, so that's one for the Republicans. If we give that one to Republicans, there are 47 Democratic seats, 45 Republican seats, and 8 swing seats. All right, so let's talk about Alaska now. Arizona now. This is a very interesting race where we basically have the astronaut Mark Kelly versus McSally, the incumbent Republican. And based off polling, this race, it looks like it's going to go to Mark Kelly. I mean, looking at some good pollsters here, Emerson College, Siena College, New York Times, they have Kelly up by 3 and 7 respectively. And just looking down, like, most of the polls have Kelly not only up by a decent margin between, I'd say, 3 and 11 points. So, yeah, this is a state that I think is going to go to Kelly. And I also, you know, do think one of the big reasons why the state's going to go to Kelly is because Martha McSally, she voted for Amy Coney Barrett, if don't get me wrong, right?
Yeah, she did.
And a lot of people were pretty upset with it. Martha McSally, she's one of the more moderate Republicans, and like a lot of people were pretty mad that like she ended up voting for Amy Coney Barrett. But even before that too, it looked like this race was going to Mark Kelly, the astronaut.
Yeah, I mean, it's never a good sign when you're like, you've never had an elected position before and you're about it. Like, and you've never, you know, been able to appeal to a large amount of candidates. Like, she lost her previous election as well. And now it's just the fact that she's an appointed senator, that's the only thing going for her. And even then, it's probably not enough to save her.
So, would you agree with me saying that Mark Kelly's going to win this race?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the lead's narrowed quite a bit, like compared to where it was a few months ago, but I still think he's going to come out of this as the winner.
Yeah, I mean, the lead narrowing is honestly just like a general trend you see as election day approaches. The leads tend to narrow down. So, yeah. But overall, we think Mark Kelly's going to win this, giving the Democrats 48 seats and Republicans 45 seats. Now let's talk about Montana. This is a very interesting race. I actually did a U.S. Gov project about this race. It's between the incumbent Steve Daines and the current Democratic governor of Montana, Steve Bullock. So you want to give some background on this one, Kailash?
Yeah, so this one's kind of strange because it's like a really solid Trump state. Like, there's no doubt about that. But just the fact that the Senate race is so close is a big deal because, you know, this is all the way out west and surrounded by completely Trump states. And plausible that many of these people will actually vote like a split ticket, which has never happened. It's not something you normally see happening, especially in the modern era. So Steve Bullock, he's very popular because like he's not as liberal as they might imagine a Democrat to be. He's actually quite like he supports whatever he thinks is best, as opposed to just, you know, supporting.
Yeah, he's more of a conservative Democrat.
Yeah, he's pretty independent in his thoughts and his positions. And that's kind of why they like him. And it's definitely Democrats' best hope of gaining a seat in that area of the country. However, according to polling, he's been up pretty, like, he's just been slightly below Steve Daines. Anything could still happen in this race. Like, back in 2018, like, John Tester, the Democrat senator from Montana, like, it looked like he was going to lose because of polling. But at the end of election day, it turned out that, like, a lot of young people came out and voted for him, and that helped him just, like, barely win. So it's very much possible that something similar could happen for Steve Bullock. But at this point, I'd still call it Republican just because of Trump's support in the state.
Yeah, this is a very tight race. I said Steve Bullock's more of a conservative, a Democrat. I wouldn't call him a conservative, but definitely more conservative. I mean, yeah. Also, you know, he is a decently popular, I think, Montana governor right now. And looking at the polls, like looking at some like B-plus rated, B or higher rated polls on 538, I see Bullock's up by one and two of them, but Daines up by three and A-plus rated poll, Daines up by one another poll, and up by two another poll. All these polls are within the margin of error, and I think this can be a very close race. This can be within 1 point, so
yeah.
There's really no telling who's going to win this one, but I'm going to have to give this one to Daines. Bullock could definitely win, but I'm going to give it to Daines simply because it's a state that actually isn't solid Republican anymore, and we'll get to that when we predict the presidency, but it's a likely Republican. But that being said, Trump's still going to win likely by 10-plus points, and I feel like Daines does have that advantage there, because I feel like with how partisan the country is, even a more right-leaning Democrat, I still feel like they're going to vote for Daines simply because of the R next to his name. Also, you have to remember that incumbents do have an advantage.
Yep.
So I'm going to give this race to Daines. Could go either way. I could definitely see it going to Bullock, but I'm going to give this one to Daines. You agree too, I'm assuming?
Yeah, definitely.
So with that race, we have the Democrats at 48 seats and Republicans at 46. Let's swing on over to Iowa now, shall we?
I think we should discuss Colorado first.
You want to discuss Colorado? All right, go ahead. I think this one's a pretty, not safe blue, but like likely blue, but we can go ahead and discuss that one.
So Democrat, like Colorado is a pretty perfect example of demographic change and what it can do. So, you know, Colorado used to be a pretty solid Republican state, like not long ago, like two decades ago, right? But now it's slowly trending blue. And we can see that, like, in the fact that their important statewide elected officials are all Democrats, with the exception of Senator Cory Gardner, who got elected in 2014. And because of the demographic change that's affecting Colorado, he's looking incredibly vulnerable. Looking at pollsters on 538 that are rated, you know, B or C, he's up by
between
14 points.
Yeah, just to interject for a minute, this isn't just about the Senate, but like in general, yeah, we're only gonna be looking at B-plus rated pollers. Like there are some Trafalgar group pollers and like SurveyMonkey. Just I think the polls that you should honestly throw out, they're really bad polls. So if you're looking at it yourself online, if you're going on 538, make sure it's like at least rated B or higher. You can filter it out. Anyways, yeah. You can go along.
So Senator Cory Gardner is incredibly vulnerable. And his challenger is Governor Hickenlooper of Colorado, who, as you may remember, last year he had a failed bid for president for the Democratic nomination. And the Democrats urged him to run for the Senate seat, which is what he's doing. And he's, you know, just by the virtue that he's a Democrat in what is becoming a blue state, he's looking very likely to win anywhere between single and double digit leads. And yeah, that's really all there is to say about it. It's pretty much the same situation as Arizona, except that, you know, it's a little further along on that demographic shift timeline.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't want to go to the state because I'm being honest. Like, I know it's technically a swing state, but we all know it's going to go to Hickenlooper. Like, so, I mean, yeah, I'm obviously going to go Colorado there again. Demographic shifts are a hell of a thing. And we're going to see that too, not just with Colorado, but a bunch of states. With demographic shifts, like it's really interesting to see even over like the last 4 years, just the straight like the demographic shifts that have happened in this country. So anyways, yeah, Colorado goes blue. I already had Colorado going blue before, so Democrats stay with their 48 seats as of right now. Yep. You want to go to any other state before we go to Iowa?
Kansas. We can discuss Kansas.
Yeah, we could discuss Kansas. It's a state, shocker, I have it going red, but it's definitely a one you could look at.
So you want to talk about this?
Yeah. So we got the incumbent marshal versus, Boyer, is that how you pronounce it? Bollier. Whatever. Bollier, yes. I know people can yell at us in the comments. Anyways. So, this is a race that, like, I think this is more of a race that just speaks to, like, demographic shifts than, like, an actual, like, I kind of lost my train of thought. Anyways, this is more of a race that kind of speaks to, I guess, like, how the country itself is shifting rather than, like, this one specific race. And what I mean by that is I think this race is going to go Republican. I think Marshall is going to win this one. But here's the thing. The reason why Kyle Schwann discussed this race is because it's decently close. Like, I don't think it's close enough to the point where Bollier can win, but I think it's close enough to the point that we have to at least talk about it. And remember, Kansas is a red state. Like, it's part of that red firewall in the Midwest. But that, even like a country that's that, even an area of the country that's that conservative, is seeing a somewhat competitive race. And if we're looking at 538, like the latest poll, a BC rated pollster called GABO 600, I've actually never heard of that one, actually has Bollier up one. And like New York Times, Siena College, an A+ rated poll, only has Marshall up four. And if you keep looking down, you'll see Marshall's leading, but not by as much of a margin as you would think in such a heavy Republican state. So I think you're really seeing the demographic shifts, even a state as conservative as Kansas. So I think that's the really interesting thing about this race. Yeah, Kyle, do you have anything to say about that?
Yeah, and essentially, so what the Democrats were hoping is that they could somehow get Chris Kobach as nominated as the Republican candidate. For those of you who don't know, Chris Kobach is like possibly the most Trumpiest person there can be. Like, he wants to just straight up try and stop immigration as much as possible. You know, he's typically what you would think of a Trumpy person. And last time, he tried to run for governor of Kansas, and in the presence of a strong independent party candidate who got a lot of votes, he ended up bringing down the Republican Party there so much that that Kansas now has a Democrat governor, which is like really strange. And the Democrats were hoping they could do the same thing here, but
keep in mind that is a more conservative, right-leaning governor, but still a Democrat. All right, go on.
Yeah. I mean, whatever you would consider, they're conservative in terms of like modern liberals, but still a Democrat. Yeah. But unfortunately, that didn't work for them. They got Roger Marshall. Polls have it really close, but in the end, this one's probably going to go for Republican anyway, just because Roger Marshall is just a candidate with no major scandals. He's just like a regular Republican politician in Kansas, so like, of course he's going to win.
Yeah, but even with that, even if Marshall wins, if Bollier gets within, I'd say, 3 points, like, that would be a major victory for Democrats.
Yep.
In its own right, yeah. All right, I think we could move on to Iowa. I don't see any other race. Maybe Texas, but I feel like that's
not
also
really
Republican. Yeah. All right, let's go on to Iowa. This is a really interesting race. You want to start off with this one, Kailash? All
right. So Iowa is like, it's one of the Midwest states, similar to Wisconsin and Michigan, and it's now like a swing state. So, you know, it's also very competitive for the presidential race. So here we have incumbent Senator Joni Ernst versus her Democrat challenger, Teresa Greenfield. So, I mean, this is pretty common with a lot of the senators we're going to look at, but people are kind of fed up with how she pretended to be independent, but like just ended up supporting Trump at every step of the way. And is like one of the most Trumpiest senators in the Senate, and that's kind of fed people up because she's just not talking about the issues that Iowans need to fix. And Teresa Greenfield is a really strong challenger in part because of like her experience, her personal experiences with how the Affordable Care Act works and why people need to expand it. Like there's this story she often tells about how like her husband got really sick and I believe died. I'm not sure of the exact story, but it was about how she was struggling as a single mother and how like things like the ACA and government assistance in general helped her get to where she is today to be able to, you know, be successful in life. And that kind of personal experience, because of that, she's been able to connect with a lot of people, and that's put Joni Ernst at a disadvantage because her outreach events have managed to reach many voters, and now like Iowa's very close in terms of just the people that are also going to be voting for Biden. What do you think about this, Ruby?
Yeah. This is like, I think the first like true swing I think we've so far discussed about the Senate elections. Yeah, I think you're right. Like, people are just fed up with Ernst in Iowa, and I think this is kind of like a growing trend. Like, in some states, it works really well to associate itself with Trump, like, very heavily, but in other states, like in other more moderate states, it is not helping, and clearly it's not helping with Joni Ernst. Greenfield is, she's probably the most, I'd say, liberal challenger we've seen so far, like, when, like in our talk so far, like versus Arizona, Colorado, Kansas, Alaska. Would you agree with that? Yeah, I'd say she's definitely the most liberal one. And I think also if you look at some speeches too, debates, obviously it's very subjective, but like I guess just based on, you know, some other polling data, it looks like, you know, Greenfield performed really well in those. I mean, this one's tough. Like, this one's like really tough. Like, looking at 538, I see like in Emerson College A-minus rated pollster, Greenfield's up 3, but in an A-plus rated pollster, Seltzer & Co., Ernst is up 4. Quinnipiac has Ernst up 2. Greenfield, Ernst is up 6 in our ABA research poll. And it's just going back and forth with who's up, who's down. I think this is going to be another race that is going to be decided by less than a point.
So what is your prediction?
I'm going to go with Greenfield. I feel like it's kind of like a prime time for Greenfield to like really challenge Ernst. I feel like this is Ernst at her weakest right now. And yeah, it's going to be very close, but I feel like she's going to pull this one off. So what do you think?
I kind of differ with you on that because I think this will just barely go to Ernst. If you look at Seltzer & Co., right? Like, it may just look like another pollster, but Seltzer is actually considered, like, one of the gold standards for polling in the country.
Yeah, no, it is an A+. It's a gold standard poll, yeah.
And she actually came out with a poll, actually, for the presidential race as well, where Trump is leading Biden by 7 points. Now, obviously, this could be an outlier, but just the fact that Trump...
I feel like it's kind of an outlier.
But just the fact that Trump could possibly have a lead will definitely help Ernst because, you know, she's tied to the president in terms of her electoral fortunes.
Yeah, I could totally see this race going to Ernst, but I'm personally going to predict Greenfield. So for my map, now our map's starting to differ. For my map, the Democrats now have 49 seats and the Republicans have 46 seats. For your map, I'm assuming Democrats 48, Republicans 47. Am I correct about that now? Yep. Okay then, so, all right. I quickly want to talk about Kentucky, not because it's a competitive race, but I feel like this is probably the Democrats' worst move here in Kentucky. So it's Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell versus Amy McGrath. And the reason why I want to talk about this race is the sheer amount of money they've poured into a candidate, Amy McGrath, who is not going to win that race. Like, seriously. Like, a lot, hands on to Democrats, like, it's like Democrat establishment leaders, also like, you know, Democratic voters too. They just poured a ton of money. I think like, I think it's like, I saw like in a span of like a few days, she got like $50 million or something. It was something ridiculous. I don't know, maybe it's $50 million for an entire thing, but regardless, Like, she has a lot of money, but it's a race that, let's be honest, McConnell's going to win this race.
Definitely.
Yeah. I feel like this is, like, probably, like, the biggest waste of money for the Democrats. So, yeah, I just want to quickly talk about that. Yeah, I mean, McGrath's, in my opinion, not a real challenger. She's running as, like, a pro-Trump Democrat, which is really kind of strange, considering that, like, why would you vote for a pro-Trump Democrat when there's McConnell on the other side? If you really do like Trump, you would just vote for McConnell.
Yeah, I mean, it's important to note that, like, in the very beginning of the whole cycle, election cycle, it looked like McGrath might actually have a chance of winning. But, like, obviously the polls were kind of narrow back then. Now they're just solidly in favor of McConnell. An important thing to note, though, is that, like, in the primaries, she was facing a really strong challenger called...
Charles Booker. That was also, speaking a little bit about Charles Booker, that was also, like, a really interesting race, because that was McGrath, like when talking about within Democrats, there's, like, the two extremes of Democrats, almost. You have, like, a pro-Trump Democrat on one side, and you have Charles Booker, like, a true progressive, like, who's actually on the left. Like, most Democrats are, like, center-right politicians. Like, Booker was actually on the left, like, a center-left leftist politician. Like, and it was a really tight margin, too, which I think... is kind of which is very interesting coming from a state like Kentucky, a very conservative state. But yeah, anyways, we just want to quickly talk about this big waste of money for the Democrats. Definitely gonna go to Mitch McConnell. Let's move on. So we have three states we can talk about. We have North Carolina, South Carolina, Georgia, and the Georgia special. What do you want to talk about?
Alabama
first. Oh yeah, Alabama. We can talk about Alabama. Yeah, Tuberville versus Jones. Want to discuss this? You want to introduce this race?
Sure. So Alabama, or do you want to do it? Do you want to introduce it?
Sure. Yeah, I got it. Let's now talk about the Alabama Senate race. So we have Jones versus Tuberville, and this was a race where I believe that Jones had to take there was an election back in 2017 when Jones had to take over because Jeff Sessions was actually wanted a job at the White House, but we all know how that turned out. Anyways, looking at this race, this is the one race where, like, there's a Democrat incumbent where it looks like they're not gonna win. I mean, looking at, like, an AB rated poll, we have Tuberville up 14, another poll Tuberville up 15. There's a BC rated poll with Jones up 1, but that's definitely the outlier. Tuberville's up by, like, in the upper teens, between 14 to 18 points. Tuberville's, in my opinion, going to win this one. It's not going to be very close. I think he's going to win by over 10 points. What do you think?
It's important to note that, like, last time when Doug Jones was running against the Republican, he was running against Roy Moore. Okay, and I'm pretty sure, like, for those of you that don't know, Roy Moore was essentially, he seemed like a strong candidate until he got accused of being a child predator. Like, multiple women came out against him.
Yeah, that usually ended.
And, you know, that was, even then, like, Doug Jones won, like, just barely, right?
Yeah, Jones, he's not a very strong candidate in a state that's very conservative, a state that's definitely going to go for Trump. So, yeah, it's quick, we want to talk about this one. Tuberville's going to win this one. Democrats are going to lose this seat. So that puts the Republicans at 46 seats and Democrats at 49 seats. For me and for you, Kailash, it's still 48-47, right? All right, so what race do you want to talk about next? You want to talk about Georgia or Georgia Special?
I think we could go with regular Georgia first.
Okay, Georgia. So this is a race where we have you want to actually introduce this one?
Sure. So we have the Republican incumbent, Senator David Perdue, and his Democratic challenger, John Ossoff. Again, David Perdue, just like in Iowa and Montana, and Alaska, he's one of those Trumpy senators who really doesn't want to think independently and do what's best for their constituents. They just do whatever Trump or, you know, whatever Mitch McConnell asks them to do.
A Trump publican, basically.
Although that could be said for the whole parties. But...
Not the whole party. There are some. There's some, anyways, go on. Mitt Romney, notable one.
and his challenger John Ossoff is essentially like running on the same "I'll be an independent candidate and I'll serve the people" kind of message. And looking at like just generally at polls, right, of this race specifically, you know, there's A minus B rated pollsters that have Ossoff up by like plus one and Perdue up by like plus two. This is a really close race. And this is also another one where we're not entirely sure how it'll go. Rushi, what's your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, Perdue again is a Trump publican. Ossoff is more again of a I guess more right leaning Democrat who will probably side, let's be honest, with the Democrats in most votes. But yeah, I mean, this is a race where I genuinely don't know who's gonna win this one. Ossoff, Ossoff, Perdue, this is gonna be a very, very tight race. I think I've said this for like two other races, but this race is gonna come down to like 1 point, less than a point.
Probably, yeah.
So in terms of prediction, I think this one depends on like what way the presidential race goes. And this might be a little bit of like a sneak preview to our what's it called again? Our predictions for president, but I'ma give this one to Perdue. A very slight edge to Perdue. Yep. I feel like even though Perdue is facing backlash, Ossoff is a stronger candidate for like Georgia. I think Perdue ekes this one out. Why? Honestly, just because Georgia has, honestly, I'm just looking at the past for this one. Like, I really am. Like, this is a very close one. Ossoff wins. I'm not going to be shocked in the slightest. What about you?
Yeah, I also have it just barely going to Perdue. I mean, there's not much of an explanation for that. It is Georgia, and looking at past trends, I mean, it has been red. There's not really much more to it. Although if John Ossoff wins, that's not going to be a big surprise. I would kind of expect.
Yeah, no surprise in that. So my map now would be Democrats at 49, Republicans at 47. Kyle, I think you have them tied at 48 apiece.
I have Dem 49, Republican 48.
Okay then. All right. So
although
let's
wait,
move on to
yeah, 40. It is actually okay. Tied. It's 48-48.
48-48. Yeah. All right. So you want to move on to Georgia special now?
Yeah, sure.
All right, so in this race, we have Warnock and Collins. And what was the reason for the special again? I kind of forgot.
I believe the previous senator is retiring.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not exactly sure what his name was. Isaacson, Johnny Isaacson. He retired, and he was replaced with Kelly Loeffler.
Kelly, yeah, okay. So who do we think... All right, so I guess I'll introduce this one. Loeffler, I'm going to be honest, even as a Republican, is not very popular. She's just not a very popular candidate. When did she take over? Like, just a couple years ago?
I think like last year, actually.
Oh, last year, yeah. 2019, yeah.
Well, not even last year, actually. January of this year.
It was? I don't know. I felt like a couple years ago. Anyways, whatever. I wasn't honestly keeping too much of track of Georgia special until like this year. I'm being honest, but anyways, right? Loeffler, not exactly the most popular senator in Georgia, even though she is a Republican and technically the incumbent. Warnock is going to be the challenger. He was a reverend. How was he related to MLK again, Kyle?
He's like the head of Martin Luther King's church, like the church where MLK served as a reverend.
Yep. And based on polling data, Warnock is very popular. Up 11, Emerson College, A-minus rated poll. Up in 12 by Landmark Communications, B rated poll. Up by 19 in a public policy polling, B rated poll. Warnock looks a favored to take this election. Like, he's very popular. I'm going to be honest. And there's a Monmouth University poll that an A-plus rated poll has him up 20. I'm going to be honest. I haven't been paying too much attention to the Georgia special election, so... I'm not exactly sure too why he's so popular. You have any reasons about that?
Okay, so here's the thing. There's two other candidates in this race, again, from Republicans and Democrats. So the Republicans have Doug Collins, and he's serving as a representative for Georgia's 9th district. And he seems like a pretty strong competitor against Kelly Loeffler. Although I do still think Loeffler will come out on top. Matt Lieberman.
Yeah, she'll be the Republican.
Yeah.
To represent.
Matt Lieberman is on the Democrat side, and he's the son of famous senator or famous politician Joe Lieberman. And he's basically, you know, facing calls to quit just because he's bringing down Warnock in the race. There's really not much you can say about him. And the reason we're noting these two other candidates is because Georgia has a weird special or jungle primary system where, like, there's four multiple candidates that are put up in, like, an initial stage in November. And then the two most popular candidates advance to a runoff election in January.
Who will likely be Warnock and
Loeffler. Most polling is just assuming that it's most likely going to be Warnock and Loeffler. And that's how it seems to be. So if it does come to that, then Warnock is most likely going to be the winner.
Yep. So I'm going to predict Warnock to win. That, for me, that will mean the Democrats will be at 50 seats and Republicans will be at 47. And Kailash, you want to also, who you can predict?
For me, that puts the Republicans at 48 and Democrats at 50.
Democrats at 50 or 49? 50.
Yeah.
50? Oh, who'd you predict for Georgia?
For regular Georgia, it was Purdue. But for the special elections.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I predict. Okay. So we both have 50. Wait, but how's it 50-47? I'm at 50-47. You're at 50-48. Oh, okay, South Carolina, yeah. All right, make South Carolina a swing for a second. All right, so, yeah. I'm at 47 for Republicans, 50 for Democrats, and Kailash at 49 for Democrats, 48 for Republicans. Let's move on to South Carolina. This is probably, I think, for me personally, the most interesting race of them all. We have Lindsey Graham going up against Jaime Harrison. To introduce this race, a year ago, this race was safe for South Carolina. There was no way in hell anyone would have thought that this race would go for anyone but Lindsey Graham. But man, has this race just shown, I guess the unpopularity of Donald Trump nationwide. Like, looking at the current rated polls, we have a BC rated poll, East Carolina University, that is Graham up by 2, a BC rated poll where Graham's up by 9, a BC rated poll where Harrison's up by 2, an A-plus rated poll, New York Times, Siena College, Graham's up by 6. This is a tight race. This is a very tight race. And this is a race that should never have been tight for Republicans. What do you think about this, Kailash?
So I think it's interesting to know, like, a lot of people, again, Lindsey Graham is kind of like a toady for the president, to put it that way.
Which was kind of funny, because during the primaries, like, he just relentlessly attacked him.
Yeah, I mean,
they all just kind of fell in line after, like, he was nominated. It's actually kind of sad.
Jaime Harrison.
You could argue the same thing's kind of happening for the Democrats. Yeah. I digress.
Jaime Harrison is someone who's like working class, who grew up working class, and who can empathize with like the people of South Carolina. He's a pretty famous, like, he was the head of like the local state Democratic Party, and he's a pretty big figure within like that state's Democratic Party. And at first it looked like this wasn't going to be a competitive race at all. But now it's just really close. And again, this is one of those swing states alongside Iowa where we like genuinely just can't tell what's going to happen.
So you want to move on to predictions? Yeah. All right, I'm going to predict Lindsey Graham holds on to the seat. This is going to be a close race, but I don't think it's going to be as close. I'm going to say this is within a 2-point margin. Jaime Harrison putting up a really good fight. He's out fundraising Lindsey Graham by a lot, but I don't think South Carolina is ready to switch just yet, and I'm going to give this one to Lindsey Graham. What about you?
So this is, again, another one where we differ. I'm going to give this one to Jaime Harrison just because I think, like, the black voters of South Carolina, historically, they just haven't been voting much because they don't feel that either party will change anything for them. But now that Jaime Harrison, a strong black candidate, is the Democrats have put him up, and the fact that, you know, he might actually win in this very red, in this otherwise very red state, is going to motivate a lot of them to vote. and I think that might just be enough to push it to Jamie Harrison. But yeah, it will definitely be within 1 point, perhaps.
Yeah, I'm not gonna be surprised if Harrison wins. Again, these are swing states, so obviously none of us are gonna be surprised if it goes one way or the other. But yeah, those are predictions. So I'm at 50-48 for the Democrats. What are you at, Kalash?
I'm at 50-48 for the Democrats as well.
So we're tied now.
So okay. An important thing to note would be that, you know, if South Carolina does elect Jamie Harrison, then South Carolina will become the first state with two black senators alongside Tim Scott, who's a Republican.
Yep. All right, so let's move on to North Carolina. So we have Tillis versus Cunningham. This North Carolina race is really interesting to me because Cunningham had kind of had a incident where I think it was like he had some, let's just say, some interesting media leak out from him. I'm not going to go too much in depth. If you want to look up yourself, you can. But yeah, he had some interesting media come out about him. I think some people can visualize what that is. But yeah, what was actually really interesting about that, even though he had that interesting media come out about him, he actually went up in the polls after that. He actually got more campaign donations after that. Kalash, what do you think about this race?
Yeah, at first it was really close, but now, like, in the middle of the summer, it just started expanding. He, in some cases, he had double-digit leads. It isn't on 538, of course, but just even last month, he had double-digit leads, but after the scandal came out, you know, his lead did go down a little bit, but he's still maintaining, like, a very consistent few points over Tillis. So
that is lead increase. That's why I saw.
Well, if you go back like really far back, he was up in lead by like 12, 13 points in some polls.
Yeah. All right.
But yeah.
So Cunningham. Yeah. Talking a little about the candidates here. Like seriously, Cunningham. He's again more of a moderate Democrat. Tillis is I don't remember. Is Tillis like a Trumpian of a moderate? A Trumpian, yeah. Seems like most Republicans are these days. Let's go in predictions now. I'm gonna go Cunningham on this one. Cunningham, he was up by a lot early on. He's down a little bit now compared to where he was, but he's still up by 2 to 10 points, which is, I know, a large margin, but still, like, you know, Emerson, a good pollster, has him up 3 points. Marius College has an A+, has him up 10 points. 3 points, Siena College, New York Times, A+ rated, AB rated, Massachusetts Lowell gives them up 4 points. I'm gonna go North Carolina. I'm gonna go Cunningham on this one. Kalash, what about you?
Yeah, same. He's undeniably gonna win, even if it's by like a smaller margin than he normally would have, like without the scandal.
All right, so. For me, that puts the Democrats at 51 and Republicans at 49. So that would give the Democrats the majority here. But even with the Democrats the majority, there are some more red-leaning Democrats. And from red-leaning, I mean, like, I guess Republican conservative-leaning Democrats who may not always go with the Democrats in all the circumstances. So a simple majority may not be enough for the Democrats. So let's talk about Maine here.
For me, it's 51-48.
51-48. Yep, same here. Let's talk about Maine here.
All right. So, should I start?
Maine is a state with. Yeah, you want to start off?
Oh, sure. So, this is like the epitome of like everything that Trumpism does. So, this is Senator, like Republican Senator Susan Collins versus Democrat Teresa Green. Or sorry, not Teresa Greenfield.
Gideon.
Yeah, Sarah Gideon. So Sarah Gideon is just like. She was a very influential figure in the state legislature in Maine. So the reason Susan Collins is even having trouble is because she's like the epitome of like the politician that acted like a moderate, but then just supported Trump on everything. So, you know, obviously there was the very first like Brett Kavanaugh vote, and she voted in favor of Brett Kavanaugh, even though she said she was quote unquote very concerned. And now, obviously, like, she said she's not going to vote on Amy Coney Barrett. But looking at the polls, you know, that wasn't enough to help her, per se. Because, you know, I'm looking at posters here, and she's, like, Gideon is up barely, but even then, like, Gideon has a very consistent lead.
Yeah. Collins tried to point her, not point herself up, but, like, make herself out to be, like, it's like a bipartisan candidate, like, work with both sides. She's probably, like the senator who tried to point herself, make herself out to be most that way, but again, with, like, I guess we're seeing, like, I guess a Trump backlash here over, especially, like, the last year. And, like, if you're associated with him in any way, even if you're more of a moderate, you're kind of, like, vilified by Democrats. And Susan Collins, she's definitely, even though she is admittedly, like, for myself, like, she is probably, like, one of the more moderate Republicans. She still, you know, has favored with Trump a decent amount, and a lot of people in Maine don't like that. And Sarah Gideon, she's one of the more liberal Democrats too, and, like, people just really don't like Collins right now in the state, which is kind of, like, crazy, because Collins is one of the more favored Democrats, one of the more favored senators. Like, people in Maine really did like Collins, but, like, now it's just completely flipped. So, you want to talk about predictions then?
Yeah. So, I have this state going blue just because of Gideon's consistent lead. Nothing that Susan Collins does is going to change that, just because, you know, she already sealed her fate when she voted yes on Kavanaugh and, you know, sided with Trump on, like, a lot of legislation.
Yeah, I gotta go with Gideon here too. She's maintained a consistent lead. Collins just does not look very popular, even with refraining to vote for Amy Coney Barrett. Like, she does not look very popular right now. I gotta go Gideon with this race. It's gonna be close. I think it's gonna be within 2 points, but yeah, I predict Gideon. So, for me, that puts the Democrats at 52 seats and Republicans at 48 seats. So, my prediction, along with Kailash, I'm assuming you're saying 52-48. Yep. So, our predictions have the Democrats taking back control of the Senate, and there's one more seat we gotta worry about, that is VP. But that's not for right now. That's for when we talk about the presidential election.
Before we leave off, there's a really quick word from our sponsors.
All right, so that's the end of our Senate election predictions. The next episode that will be going up around the same time, we're going to be discussing the presidential elections. Stay tuned for that one. That's going to be a really interesting one as well, if not more interesting. But yeah, anyways, if there's nothing else you want to say, Kailash?
Nope, that's our predictions, and we'll see you in the next episode.
Hit that outro!